Welcome to the Healing Grove Podcast. I'm Dr. Kristen Ryman, an integrative holistic family physician, author of Life After Lyme, and host in this virtual space of learning, healing, and growing. I believe humans are like trees, and our physical limb is only one of many. Health on all limbs of the tree, emotional, conceptual, social, spiritual, is absolutely required for the whole tree that is you to be vibrantly well. I created the Healing Grove Podcast as a place to showcase some of the world's best integrative and holistic medicine, to expose you to transformative tools and mindset shifts for all limbs of your tree. I hope you enjoy our conversation in the Healing Grove today as much as I enjoyed having it. Hello, everyone. Hi, Dr. Schaffner. How are you today?
It's so nice to see you, and thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I'm so glad you're here. So I want to introduce you to everyone. So everyone, this is Dr. Christine Schaffner. She's a board-certified naturopathic physician who graduated from Bastyr University in Seattle, Washington. Prior to Bastyr, she completed her undergraduate studies in pre-medicine and psychology at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia. Dr. Schaffner is passionate about practicing medicine and creating healing spaces. And in addition to seeing patients, Dr. Schaffner has built a network of partnerships and practitioners from all over the world who are committed to treating persistent Lyme disease. Through these connections, she's established a unique set of skills and knowledge to serve her patients. And with this diverse skill set, Dr. Schaffner seeks to improve access, outcomes, and speed of recovery for patients struggling with chronic illness, wherever they may be, which I know is a goal for all of us on this talk today. Today, she's going to be speaking to us about the important lymphatic system, which you may or may not have heard of. So get ready. So welcome, Dr. Schaffner.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, so before we get into talking about the lymphatic system, I'd love to hear a little bit about your story and your path and what brought you to this field of study.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely been a journey and an evolution for sure. And I, you know, grew up in Virginia and I went to the University of Virginia and I studied pre-medicine, and I was really open, even in that time, looking back at, you know, just asking the deeper questions. And, you know, when we used to go to bookstores, right, going to the spiritual and mind-body medicine section and, you know, reading books by people like Dr. Candace Pert and Molecules of Emotion, and, you know, just having these, just these questions that, you know, as I was a young adult, investigating and looking into. And I had some family friends tell me about Bastyr University, and Bastyr is in Seattle, Washington. And so I took the leap and I went in that direction. I grew up in a family of medicine. My father is an oncologist. My mother has a nursing background and, you know, taught in nursing schools and was a quality and education director at a big hospital. And so I was always around the conventional medicine model. And I remember going into the hospital and being like, I would never want to heal or die in this setting, you know? And so it was just something that always imprinted me. Of course, I have a lot of respect for conventional medicine. It serves a purpose. I'm not saying that. It's just looking at this from another angle. And so I went to Bastyr. So that's one of the handful of universities that basically teach naturopathic medicine. And so I got my degree there. It's just been quite an evolution and journey. And, you know, we've learned so much. And yeah, it makes me hopeful for it in that way. And, you know, people like you, Kristen, that are creating these communities and these education platforms so people can get more help. Because I think the biggest lesson that I feel like we all need to continue to work together with is that we can shorten the time of people getting properly diagnosed and being put on an effective treatment plan. Because, you know, it's just heartbreaking for me to see people who have, it's not from a lack of effort, but it's just, you know, from lack of, you know, maybe an understanding of where to look for, what to look for, or what to seek out, that people, you know, lose decades of their life. And, you know, I just really want to, you know, be part of the solution. And I just think we're at this, you know, pivotal point where we can continue to bring education, but also bring more and more tools to help shorten also not only the diagnostic time, but also the treatment time, because it still takes a while for people to feel better. So I just think it's really great that we're all collaborating and learning from each other. And I really feel so blessed and fortunate on my path. And I know you've shared your story with me, Kristen, and, you know, we can look back and say like, oh, wow, like things really lined up in a way that I could never have planned or ever predicted if it was just left to my own you know, mind. And so I'm just extremely grateful.
Beautiful. Well, there's so many facets that we could talk about that you have real profound expertise in. But I really want to focus up on the glymphatics. And the reason for that is most people haven't even heard of that word. I mean, that wasn't a word I learned in medical school. I don't know if you heard of the glymphatics in naturopathy school, but like that wasn't something that it was even on my radar until a couple of years ago. So what the heck is it and why does it matter?
Yeah. And I think, you know, even before diving in, it's such a good point, right? It's like, how much do we continue to learn over the years? And what we've learned in school is either outdated or evolved. And so I think always keeping an open mind, you know, when we're looking at the body and how to approach healing is really important. So the glymphatic system actually, you know, there was a couple different researchers, but actually even University of Virginia, where I went to school, did a bunch of preliminary research and introducing this concept into the medical profession. But the glymphatic system is this lymphatic system that we have in our brains. And so it's called the glymphatic system because it's the glial dependent lymph system. So it's dependent on what we call glial cells. So glial cells are a type of neuron, and there are different groups of glial cells. The glymphatic system relies heavily on the astrocytes, which are kind of these Pac-Men or cleanup. They help to clear debris and waste in the brain. But what they do in the glymphatic system is if you Google and kind of search an image of an astrocyte, you'll see that they kind of have these spider-like tentacles and they form these networks where they actually have on their tentacle-like structures these what we call end feet, and then they have different channels where they actually, they're the aquaporin 4 channels, where they regulate the flow of water along the neurons and so and cerebral spinal fluid. And so what's happening with the glymphatic system is that when we sleep, our brains shrink 60% in size to actually make room for this lymphatic drainage to happen. And so what happens is the brain shrinks, and then lymph actually, it follows the arteries and the veins. So the lymph flows along the arteries, so the blood flow going into the brain. Then these astrocytes regulate the water flowing along the neurons, and then it exits along the veins. And so what's happening when this occurs every time we sleep is that we're bringing nutrients to neurons and we're removing waste. And so one of the things that they've shown is that a good night's sleep is actually important in clearing something called amyloid beta in the brain. And what we know is that amyloid beta is a signal of neurodegeneration. So when that builds up, that can affect the health of the neuron and can actually create the neuron to, it can create damage and actually neuronal cell death. And when we see that, we see neurological symptoms, right? So we want to keep our neurons healthy, alive, communicating well. And our glymphatic system is crucial for this. And so from my lens and my perspective, this is really important when we're looking at chronic illness, you know, Lyme disease, because we know that these pathogens, as well as environmental toxicants, they get into our brains, and then they can also create damage, poor communication, cell death. And we need our glymphatic system to be working really optimally to help to clear pathogens as well as environmental toxicants out of the brain. And so I think it's such an exciting field. I really love talking about this because, again, as you said, Kristen, it's still very, you know, it's still unknown. And I think it's just such a foundational way to look at our brain health and our nervous system and, you know, really recovering from a chronic illness. And when we treat patients that we see, this can be really complex. We can think about all these different directions to go, but we can also always rely on, which my naturopathic roots really help me to rely on, are the foundations of health, right? So why is sleep so important? We know we feel better from sleep, but it's really because it's detoxifying our brain. You know, why is the lymphatic system important? Because it's our waste clearance and, you know, immune surveillance system. So keeping our, you know, natural organs of elimination and our lymphatic system optimized, that just sets up the foundation to deal with these complex chronic illnesses.
So what sorts of things, you mentioned toxicants and infections that require the glymphatics to be working well, but like what could actually impair the glymphatics? Mm-hmm. Do those things also create obstacles to the actual clearance of those same things?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's, you know, multifactorial, right? So of course, a lot of our patients can have insomnia, right? So insomnia can be disrupted sleep, and that can be, it's the chicken or the egg argument, right? But it's definitely a factor in impairing lymphatic drainage, and we can circle back to that. But one of the things that I always like to share, you know, when we especially address chronic illness, is that when you think about, I just described this, okay, we have blood flow going in to our brain, and we have blood coming out of our brain. And we have known over the years that if when people have chronic illness, that they're actually their venous drainage. So think of your jugular veins or the outflow of blood out of your brain. In chronic illness, we have seen that the veins become what we call narrowed or stenotic. So there can be basically a narrowing, and think of it as like a kink in the hose, or kind of a, you know, if we basically have these narrowed veins in our neck, that's going to prevent blood drainage out of our brain and create this congestion, right? And they've shown studies with multiple sclerosis that the white matter lesions usually form around the venules. So that's kind of upstream, you know, in the brain, that there can be damage. So basically blood isn't draining as well. So there can be iron deposits in the brain, and that can lead to white matter lesions. And so why I say that is that an obstacle to the lymphatic drainage is, number one, poor venous outflow in the neck, and that can, because not only affect blood drainage, but again, that the lymph system needs the blood to be flowing out of the brain for it to also flow out of the brain as well. So that's something to think about, and we can talk about that more. And then also congestion in the lymphatic system, right? So primarily we want to think of the cervical lymph nodes. So many patients with Lyme and chronic infections have cervical lymphadenopathy. So some congestion in the cervical lymph nodes, the immune system's working hard to deal with all the pathogenic stress. And so if there's congestion here, that can affect lymph drainage as well out of the brain. And then we can't just ignore the neck. We also have to think downstream. So when we think about the lymphatic system, we also think that there's a really wonderful manual lymphatic drainage technique that we do that's hands-on, that we first address the lymph in the abdomen. So that is often, I think, underestimated. Even if you're thin, if you've had chronic inflammation and congestion and dysbiosis in your gut, that can also translate to lymphatic pooling. We call it radix edema. So it's between the, it's kind of behind the intestines that this lymph buildup can happen. And if that that is pooled in the abdomen, that can affect lymph drainage downstream. So we actually work on the abdomen as well. And you can do that with castor oil packs, self-massage, of course. But we, you know, with our patients who come to see us, we actually have them see a therapist to help them with this. So so downstream lymphatics are important for the brain to drain. And then, you know, again, when we're thinking about the head and the brain, I can't not talk about, you know, the mouth. And so we're, you know, always looking at a dental history, you know, reviewing if people have had amalgam fillings, if they've had root canal teeth or wisdom teeth cavitations. That can also create stress in the body and create systemic stress, but also can, you know, continually affect the lymphatic system, especially in the neck. And so cleaning up the mouth is a way to kind of, you know, I kind of think of people have these either toxicants or infections in the mouth, that is this continual poisoning, you know, of the lymphatic. So we need to clean up the mouth. And of course, we also look at the sinuses. So the sinuses, especially with our patients, can be what we call a chronic focal interference field. So this kind of area of chronic dysbiosis that creates biotoxins, and that can create, you know, disruption in the brain, and that can also congest the lymphatics. And so when the patients have had mold exposure, they can, you know, grow not only mold, but also bacteria in the sinuses. Also, if you've just had a lifetime of dental issues, the migration of, you know, mercury or other, you know, not only metal, but also pathogens can affect the sinuses. So we always want to, when we think about draining the brain, we don't want to ignore the sinuses and the mouth as well. So those are just kind of the, you know, the brief checkpoints. You know, of course, we want to encourage really deep and restful sleep. You know, we want to look at the blood flow, and not only in the brain, but out of the brain. We want to clean up the sinuses and the mouth. And then we want to support not only the lymphatics in the neck, but the lymphatics in the rest of the body, especially paying attention to the abdomen.
Wow. So that was I feel like I just took a grand tour of the entire lymphatic system. I can just see that picture. If you Google lymphatic system, you'll see like the person with the green, like all the green pathways through them. But I guess I'm wondering, so for people who are saying, well, yes, that's definitely me. I'm definitely congested. I definitely have these sinus issues, or I have chronic Lyme and brain fog and all these, you know, persistent lymphadenopathy, you know, which are the little like swollen like glands that people talk about. Other than castor oil packs, what are some simple things that people can access easily to start to ungum their, you know, ungum the works basically?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm glad you asked that. And I think this, you know, not only the lymphatic system, but the lymphatic system is still one of the most overlooked systems in the body, especially when we look at a chronic, you know, complex chronic illness patient. And so I think anything that you can do to support your lymphatic system is only going to lead you to health. And so I'm happy to walk you through that. And just know also, like with anything, that when you've had a lot of stagnation and your lymphatic system's just been overwhelmed, when we start moving it, it's not uncommon for people to feel flu-like in the beginning. It doesn't happen always, but it can happen. And it doesn't mean that lymph drainage is not good for you. It means that we have a lot of work to do. So I just want to give that caveat. And for all of our protocols, and I'm sure you do this, Kristen, as well, as we really lay the foundation with binders. And binders are going to be things like chlorella, zeolites, modified citrus pectin. There's also charcoals and clays and you name it. There's so many binders now on the market. And so binders help to basically mop up not only environmental toxicants, but biotoxins that get eliminated, especially through the bile and the liver. And so they're really important to be in the intestines to grab what's being excreted via the bile and kind of eliminate that through the stool, because that really helps that equation of always trying to you know, detoxify and treat pathogens, but not create a Herxheimer reaction or an aggravation. So if you feel like you want to start doing these lymphatic tools, I would caution you to have binders in your protocols, just so we can minimize any side effects, because you're going to get the system flowing and your body's going to want to eliminate, and we want to give your body support to eliminate these things. So I just want to share that. And then, so again, simple things. So dry skin brushing, that's an old-timey naturopathic tool that you can do before you shower. That's just using gentle brush-like strokes. You get a dry skin brush, always moving towards the side of your heart. So that's something that you can do. Movement, so walking is really important for our lymphatic system. Some people have rebounders, which are these little trampolines that you can jump on. There's other things that are more sophisticated, but you don't need to spend all the money. You can do simple things, but if you want to kind of up your game, you can get a vibration plate. That is basically like a shaking machine that helps to support your lymphatic system. Castor oil packs are really helpful. I'm a big proponent of coffee enemas. Coffee enemas really help to move not only bile, but lymph out of the gut. That can be very helpful. We use different topicals, not only a castor oil pack, but we'll do different topicals, especially in the neck, because I feel like this is a big area where our patients are stuck. BioPure created this herbal deodorant called the DO. That's herbal-based, and that also helps to move the lymph. I have people put that on their neck, their clavicle, their underarms, the bikini line, or groin area behind the knees and the bottoms of the feet at bedtime, and that can be really helpful for moving the lymph. For women, also, if you want to think about, you know, your lymphatic system, or, you know, our breasts are lymphatic tissue, right? So if you have any symptoms with your breast health, it's just an indicator that you really need to work on your lymphatic system. So I, you know, like to encourage women not to wear underwire bras, because that can affect the lymphatic system. If you have any, like around PMS, swollen or tender breasts, or fibrocystic breasts, or fibroadenomas, which are these benign cysts that develop, it's just a window into really looking not only into estrogen metabolism and estrogen dominance, but also looking at the lymphatic system. And so I have patients even use castor oil on their breasts at night, or you know, that herbal deodorant. They can do that. Always, you know, look at the mouth. If there's chronic breast issues, make sure that there's not a toxic tooth that's draining into the breast. So Those are, you know, the big strokes. I like herbs, you know, I like drainage remedies and herbs as well. So I'll use either physica or pecana remedies, you know, for lymph drainage. I also like herbs like red root and cleavers and red clover, you know, to help drain the lymphatic system. So we have so many tools, and I think it's just, you know, what can you kind of use foundationally in your lifestyle. So taking a walk every day, if you get a rebounder, or, you know, jump on the rebounder every day, you know, incorporate dry skin brushing, castor oil packs or coffee enemas in your routine. And then you can rotate through different topicals, different herbs, different drainage remedies. And then in your mind, especially where, depending on where you are with your treatment, just go through that checklist. Do you still have work to do looking at mold in your home? Do you still have work to do with looking at your mouth? Do you still have, you know, work to do, you know, just looking at any other obstacle that could be preventing your lymphatic system from draining, you know, properly? And so I just want to share that. And then one thing that I haven't mentioned, Kristen, that I don't want to forget is with insomnia, one of the most overlooked reasons for insomnia is EMF. And so creating a safe sleeping location can be one of the best things that you do for your sleep, which in turn is great for your lymphatic system and recovering your brain.
Wow. So this is so relevant to me right now. I'm working with a bunch of people who are on the front lines in the COVID thing. Mm-hmm. And sleep is a huge issue for like half the people, right, who are on mm-hmm. night shift, working 14-hour shifts. Mm-hmm. I actually gave a talk to them yesterday about the importance of sleep. But then, of course, when are they going to get it? So here's my question. Is there the same benefit to sleeping during the day as there is at night? Because some people, for whatever they're doing, their sleep is shifted and they have to be sleeping at different mm-hmm. times of the day. What I've learned and what I often tell people is that the hours before midnight are worth double qualitative mm-hmm. than the hours after midnight in terms of detoxification and drainage. I mean, is that true? Should I stop saying that? Is sleep, whenever it happens, better than no sleep? I mean, what's the story there?
Yeah, you know, I hear you, and I'm in agreement with you. Obviously, with these, you know, wonderful people who are, you know, doing their life's work, helping people on the front line, you know, they've just got to sleep when they can. And so, you know, I know that there are studies, you know, that night shift work is actually carcinogen, and it is a reality to know. And so, you know, with people who do night shift work, really, you know, understanding it's a time and a place in their life and not forever. The body is so resilient. The human, you know, body is resilient. And if it's a period of time, but if it's a lifetime, that's where, you know, we need to, you know, really counsel people to maybe look at this differently. I would encourage people who are doing night shift work and just getting their sleep, you know, whenever they can, to really take melatonin. Melatonin is a powerful, a neuroprotective antioxidant. It's produced by our pineal gland. It helps us get into a deep sleep, and it helps us with our circadian rhythm. But melatonin in and of itself not only helps us with sleep, but it helps us detoxify our brain. So melatonin helps with clearing viruses and pathogens from our brain, as well as heavy metals such as aluminum and mercury. So having, and then it's, you know, there's a lot of research of cancer and melatonin. And I have the same, whenever we look up melatonin, it's like all roads lead back to melatonin, you know, like melatonin does really everything, you know? So I think it's a really important thing to supplement with. I think honestly, I'm again going to be biased with the patients I see, but I do think that melatonin is safe, and it's really, we're living in a melatonin deficient time. Modern life is, you know, we have all sorts of circadian rhythm imbalances and different, you know, light exposures. And, you know, then of course, the things that are affecting our pineal gland, like fluoride and aluminum and glyphosate. So we're all, you know, we're essentially, probably just being in modern life, not producing as much melatonin as we would if we were living in utopia. Also, our gut microbiome is really essential in producing melatonin. We produce a lot of serotonin in our gut with a healthy gut microbiome. And if that's compromised because of dysbiosis and environmental toxicants, we won't be converting that serotonin into melatonin. So I think, you know, ultimately, melatonin is something that we should all be considering. And then especially it's of high and great importance for our night shift workers. I would really encourage them to use that.
And are you just dosing, would you just dose them at the usual 3 milligrams, or are you using the higher dosing that a lot of people are?
Yeah, you know, it depends. Of course, everyone's different. Everyone's unique. We use liposomal melatonin as kind of our baseline, and liposomal melatonins could be a little bit better absorbed and can get into the brain better. We will dose higher with a lot of our patients who are under our care because of not only its benefits for sleep, but its benefits for detoxifying the brain. So we will incorporate not only oral melatonin, but sometimes transdermal melatonin that you can get compounded. We go as high as 125 to 250 milligrams. You heard me right, you know, with that. And then also we'll use suppositories. So melatonin suppositories that are 200 to 400 milligrams. Again, do this with a doctor's supervision. You want to make sure that you don't have anything that would make this a contraindication in your life. But we've actually, it's been something, Kristen, I've been pleasantly surprised on how well people do with this. And then you want to support, for some people, when they're getting acclimated to this, they can have a detox reaction because it's moving a lot of things in their body. So binders, and with some patients, pairing this with chelation can help them feel less foggy in the morning and can, you know, help them tolerate the higher dose. But there's a lot of great literature on melatonin and how melatonin really is, you know, really a wonderful tool for neurological illnesses and cancers.
Beautiful. Wow. So a lot to think about, and it's all so, so helpful. So for people who are out there, there are a lot of people I'm sure who have already self-identified as like, yes, that's what I need. And there are other people who are thinking, well, I mean, don't we sort of have like a self-cleaning oven going on in the brain? Like, should I be doing this stuff? Should I build it into my routine if I feel healthy?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. Yeah. And I think, as you and I both know, you know, just life on the planet right now, we're up against a lot, right? There's just a, you know, unprecedented time with, you know, a lot of this environmental toxicant exposure, right? We, I have a mentor who always says 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2 anymore, right? We just are in this, you know, we're bombarded by a lot of different things. And this is starting from birth at this point, right? So, you know, we're not coming to the planet with this clean slate. We're all starting at birth with an environmental burden. So I think we just need to be realistic about that. And then, you know, throw on top of that, you know, a lot of course, the ever-growing electrosmog exposure that we're still probably not, I mean, I don't think anyone can be conclusive of how this is going to affect, you know, humans. So we're in this grand experiment right now on how this level of radiation on, like, again, radiation is cumulative over time, right? So we're not getting these breaks, you know, often, you know, we would be able to go in the woods or go into the house and not have a cell phone, you know, cell phone signal, but there's always, you know, Wi-Fi and cell phone signals around us at all times. And so again, this bombardment of electrosmog is something that I think we all need to just understand. And then, you know, of course, what are these things? I'm a big believer in that, you know, I certain pathogens are more virulent right now, but, you know, we're a body of bacteria and viruses, and, you know, we're more bacteria than human cells. We are meant to co-evolve with pathogens. And yes, you know, certain things are harmful for us, but how do we quickly recover and heal from those and move on? But we're in this constant state of chronic infection. And I think it's really a lot to do with our terrain, right? And what the terrain idea is all about, when you think about the analogy of a garden, right? Just thinking about really how do we have nutritious soil that we're growing the healthiest, you know, environment and ecosystem. And I think because of the pollutants and the toxicants and the electrosmog and all of these factors, our terrain has been compromised. And in turn, we become more hospitable for opportunistic infections, and these things that should be short-lived are, you know, now lasting a long time. So I think that we all need to understand, you know, that and the world that we're in. Just because you feel healthy and you're symptomatic or not symptomatic right now, I think it's just our due diligence to educate our communities and our environments, or our community and our patient rather, about our environment, so we can be proactive, right? So sometimes people are like, you know, they're healthy and all of a sudden they get cancer and they don't understand. And it's, you know, all of these things affect us in different ways, whether it shows up as heart disease, you know, cancer, neurological diseases, the vague, you know, who knows what's wrong with you, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia symptoms. So I just think, Yeah, I think this is relevant to all of us. The more the more I do this work, I just think we all need to do our part to increase awareness, give people proactive tools. And yes, of course, if you're on the better health end of the spectrum, you don't have to spend your whole day focusing on your health, but how do you create these lifestyle routines that will only continue to allow your health to thrive as we age?
Beautiful. That's such an important public service announcement. I appreciate that. So if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh my God, she has exactly what I need. I need to work with her, or I want to take some next step in the direction of, you know, just being in the matrix with you. What would that look like?
Oh, thank you. Well, I am doing a lot more online, as you are too, Kristen, and how can we serve more people and get people more education online? And I have partnered with my dear friend, Dr. Ginger Nash, and we are creating a Women in Lyme program. I see men, of course, too, but I see a lot of women. Women are primarily, my primary population and my patients. And I think women are vulnerable. We know women have more autoimmune illness, and you know they can be more vulnerable to these complex chronic illnesses because of the intricacies of our immune systems. And I also, again, I'm, you know, I love men and I love women. You know, no bias here, but you know, just being a woman myself, I feel. You know, there's this unique opportunity, right? Not only to look at all the physical factors, but I think there's just this huge opportunity to bring, without sounding too woo, but the concepts of the sacred feminine into our landscape right now. And I think there's so many gifts. And when we embrace those parts of ourselves of intuition and knowing and connection and collaboration, I think those are the concepts, whether we're male or female, that the world needs right now. So we're really working on not only how to support women, but also how can we have that more interconnected conversation of how we can see our health as interconnected to the planet's health and really reconnecting to these cycles and rhythms that we're all very aware of in our bodies. The female body has all of these intricate cycles. And so we're really excited to just explore that and, you know, put those themes into, you know, into our, weave them into our course. And yeah, just share that information if that resonates with you. We'd love to get to know you. And yeah, we're just trying to create more and more things online so we can help more people.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that beautiful gift that you're creating for the world. It's going to be well received, I know. So I think it's our time to end, but before we end, I just want to ask you, is there anything else that, as you consider this population of, you know, men and women who have complex, chronic, mystery illnesses, like what would you say to them from your heart that hasn't been spoken yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thank you for asking that. And I, you know, I am in this always contemplative, reflective place with the patients I see. And, you know, I just want to share, you know, if you're struggling out there, you know, really that I know this can be a really challenging path, but there's always a way. And there's always a solution, and to really not lose sight of that. And, you know, part of our role, Kristen, and our role with serving this patient population is we really hold our patient's hand as they go through these dark places of their journey. And I just want to know, I want you to know if you're in that dark place, that there's absolutely light at the end of the tunnel. I've seen so many patients, you know, heal and recover. And, you know, I just don't lose sight of that vision for yourself of what your healing looks like. And, you know, we're all on the planet for a reason right now. And I think that our patients are who are sick are these canaries in the coal mine, that you guys are so interconnected with what the planet needs right now. And just to know that you're not alone, and that the more that you heal your body, you're just going to be, you know, there's just such an opportunity to heal together. So I just want to give you, you know, just a message of hope. So
thank you. And that was so beautiful.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healing Grove podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to like and subscribe. And if you want to deepen your experience further, consider grabbing a copy of the Healing Grove Playbook. With journal prompts for this podcast and 41 others, it's the perfect place to record your learnings, keep track of the tools you explore, and reflect on your own experience. Finally, it's important to mention that even though I am a doctor, nothing you hear on this podcast, whether from myself or my guests, constitutes medical advice.
Any intervention you try should always be discussed with and supervised by a trusted member of your own healing team. Thanks for listening, and see you next time in the Healing Grove.